In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the first hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose for Friday, May 6, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's 3 o'clock on Friday, which means it's the Federal News Countdown. Every week at this time, I bring in two people who are experts in the world of the federal government, have them choose the news stories from the past week that they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government, and we count them down in order from number three to number one. My expert guests this week are John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. John's great to see you.
Good to be here as always, Francis.
Nice to have you in the studio, and my other expert is Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller, and Jason, glad you're here as well. Always a fun time when we count them down on Friday.
It's been a while since it's always going to be back.
It has been a while. I wonder why. You're my pinch hitter, and so you don't get on as often as some of the folks who come in, but it's good to have you here.
Can you call me Benny Ayala once in a while?
Would love to call. I love the 1979 and 83 World Series Orioles reference there from Benny Ayala. And Desenberg, you're a baseball fan, so you probably appreciate that reference,
too.
Oh,
sure. You know, who can forget the year 1988 where they lost 20 in a row?
Yeah. Thanks for that, by the way. By the way, this is the last appearance of John Desenberg on the Federal News Countdown. Thanks to, I'm just kidding. We always, of course, start the Federal News Countdown with
number three.
Third most important federal news story of the week from John is from the National Journal. The headline is, in raid on Bin Laden, little-known geospatial agency played vital role. I don't think people understand that the intelligence community is comprised of so many components that do so many different things and look at so many different things around the world.
Well, you know, and how could we have this week's countdown without talking about the raid on Bin Laden?
Of course.
You couldn't avoid that. The reason that I bring up NGA is, number one, I don't think a lot of people understand the different components inside the world of national intelligence. The other thing, and I think maybe very interesting to some of our listeners here, is Letitia Long, who is the new director of NGA, is the first female to run an intelligence organization in the history of this country. And, you know, it's not just what her gender is. It's the kind of vision she's bringing to that agency. She's bringing a vision of changing NGA. And let me just describe it without getting into any kind of national security issues here. What she's doing over there is trying to bring what they call the power of geo-intelligence, which is the maps and the satellites, down to the user, which means if you are a soldier in the field, you no longer have to work through, you know, different people and different layers and different bureaucracies to get the information you need. The information comes right down to you on your mobile device, wherever you are. If you're in Afghanistan, if you're in Pakistan, they are changing the way that organization works in a way that really brings it into the cutting edge of technology. And, you know, I don't think many people know about this. It's very, very interesting.
Well, in fact, what's interesting about this story as well is NGA is actually part of a broader initiative with the Defense Intelligence Agency, the National Reconnaissance Agency, and NSA. I just reported on this called the Quad Initiative. And this is the directors all signed an MOU, and the CIOs are all getting together to do exactly just what you're saying, is, okay, let's make sure we have standards, make sure we have enterprise architecture. And I think this is an example, and the way you described it, of what is going to come from this Quad Initiative. And this is just a small piece of what the future is going to look like.
All right. John, your story number three is from the National Journal. The headline is, in raid on Bin Laden, little-known geospatial agency played vital role. Jason, your story number three is from Federal News Radio. It's Jared Serbu's scoop on this kind of headbutting that doesn't seem to be making a lot of it kind of jumped out of the woodwork. Two leaders on the House Armed Services Committee on TRICARE premiums and the money that service members pay for their health insurance.
The reason why I picked this story is I thought that it was fascinating that here you had the subcommittee chairman say, no, I don't think we need to increase TRICARE fees. And here you had the committee chairman saying, no, I think we do. And who usually wins that battle? I would imagine it's going to be the committee chairman. Now, at the same time, there's got to be a vote. It's going to be a markup of the bill. So mm-hmm. If the subcommittee chairman gets enough people, who knows what's going to happen. But this is an issue that we're going to see time and again, healthcare costs. They're going up for DOD. The fact is, DOD has never raised health care costs. Every time they've tried, Congress has said, no, we don't want to do
this
that.
This very kind of thing, but it's normally a Republican
versus Democrat
party thing, yeah.
Right, and these are both Republicans here. And DOD is not trying to just say, you know, we're going to take you from 0 to 60. They're going, you know, 0 to 10. And we just need a little more money and a little help because of the overwhelming cost this is. So the fact is that there's still this kind of pushback at the committee level, the subcommittee level, and then the main committee comes in and goes, no, I think we're going to have to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the difference is, and you don't see it always in the public as well. And, you know, and I'll give credit to my colleague Jared Serbu for, you know, kind of making the story happen. He asked the question that got, committee chairman Buck McKeon to talk about it. So this was a fascinating story.
Yeah, kudos to him because nobody else has this. And that's the quote that Chairman McKeon saying, we haven't done anything to raise that premium for years and healthcare costs have gone up so rapidly. In a perfect world, I'd like to give everybody everything, but it isn't that way. And there's more from Chairman McKeon that Jared got after this event. And I recommend it to you at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All the stories that we have on the Federal News Countdown this week are posted there, so you can read them all anytime you want, and you can hear the countdown. We'll post it for you when it wraps up in just a bit. We come back with story number two from Federal News Radio's Jason Miller and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
Geospatial intelligence is one of the fastest growing industries across the defense, intelligence, and homeland security community. Come to the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation's Career Fair on Tuesday, May 10th to learn more about exciting job opportunities and openings. This career fair is absolutely free and no registration is required. Don't miss the USGIF Career Fair, Tuesday, May 10th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency in Reston. For more information, go to usgif.org. That's usgif.org.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Monday morning's Federal Drive. The CIA has a treasure trove of information from Bin Laden's hideout. We'll learn more about a computer forensics investigation. And listen for BRAC Impact, a Federal News Radio and WTOP in-depth series. Anthony Principi is a former VA secretary and the chairman of the BRAC Commission. He joins us live. That and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My experts on the countdown this week are John Desenberg from the Performance Institute and Jason Miller, Federal News Radio Executive Editor. And we're up to
number two.
Second most important federal news story of the week for John Desenberg is headline, Civilian BRAC Gains Hill Support. I'll get a plug in here quickly for our BRAC series next week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where we look at the real BRAC, as it stands right now at least, the military BRAC, at 40 minutes after the hour on the Federal Drive in the mornings and on In-Depth with Francis Rose in the afternoons. We're doing that all next week. What did you think about this idea of a civilian BRAC, John? Does this idea translate to these 12,000 or so properties that OMB's talking about here?
Well, you know, what's interesting about the BRAC, and more beyond even just property and consolidation, is it's this growing sense that the only way Congress can deal with some of these issues is through this up-and-down vote structure, you know, where they can't pick off pet projects and save the project in their district, but the only way to deal with some of our toughest issues is to give them a complete list and either let them vote yes or no on
all
it.
All or nothing.
Because otherwise we just don't get anything done. And for many years, people pointed to the BRAC as one of a real innovation, because that's what it did. Others say, you know, you're taking power away from Congress, and that's not right. They should be allowed to do it the old-fashioned way. So I think this structure is very interesting, and I think we're going to be turning to it more and more as time goes on. Now, as far as the property issue, you know, I worked at GSA for almost 15 years. We've been wrestling with this forever. And it kind of goes in waves. Sometimes they say, well, we should be leasing all of our space. Then the tide turns and they say, well, you know, it really makes more long-term sense to buy the building. And they've just been going back and forth for so long on this that perhaps the BRAC is the only way to get traction.
Mm-hmm. You've been following this for a long time. What did you see as this, as the details of this started to emerge this week, Jason?
I think there's a couple things that came out. The first thing is the Hill support for it is growing. Mm-hmm. As soon as the White House said, okay, we're going to submit our legislative proposal, you had two congressmen and senator come right out and say, yeah, I agree, let's get this done. Senator Carper, over the Democrat in the Senate side, obviously, and Jeff Denham, the Republican who heads the Transportation Infrastructure Subcommittee. And then just yesterday, I got a letter from Congressman Daryl Issa, the chairman of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, who says, you know what, I support this too, and I'm going to ask the Congressional Budget Office for a cost estimate. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, not only do I think that this is a good idea, I want to find out how much this bill is going to cost and could save. So I think that the support is building, and the support, not just on the Hill, is building from both sides of the aisle and from the right people who have jurisdiction over this.
You know, there's one issue this ties into that I think may be of interest, which is telework. Mm-hmm. And there was a large telework event this week at the Reagan Building. And one of the things about telework is the way we're doing telework today, largely where people maybe take one day a week off, does not save on office space, because they have to maintain their desk.
There
their
has
phone,
to be some place for them to work
cubicle.
The other 4 days.
So if this kind of thing moves forward, we're going to have to see what I would call real telework, where people actually give up their desk. And I think, you know, the baby steps we've taken so far, where people take a day at home but still get their desk at work, that's going to go by the wayside. People will have to go to this hoteling method where they're going to give up their desk.
I wonder if managers are really ready for that, though.
Well, you know, it's funny, because you bring up hoteling, and GSA, who's in their new building at north of Massachusetts Avenue in NoMa area of D.C., they are, when they move back to their 18th and F Street, because it's getting redone, that's what they're going to exactly be doing. You know, Martha Johnson has talked about taking, you know, 5,000 people and put them in a space that used to hold 3,000 people, and the only way they're going to do that is through that idea of hoteling. Now, the BRAC issue, though, also the other piece of it is the steps that agencies have to go through to get rid of the property are just over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's some good reasons for it sometimes, but I think also that they're saying, the administration's saying, there's got to be an easier way. There's some things, yes, we don't want to just sell off, but if we have a flagpole, We shouldn't have to offer it to the schools and the state governments. We should just be able to sell this flagpole.
Yeah.
And a flagpole, that you think I'm joking, but a flagpole is a piece of excess federal property. So I think that that's what's the other really interesting piece that's coming from this.
What is that whole idea of removing these restrictions is one of the things that Jeff Zients talked about and that you and Jared wrote about, Jason. Based on your GSA experience, John, is the agency willing to give up that autonomy as these things get noodled through? Or is it something that if OMB says, you just have to do it, they just have to do it?
Well, I think they have to do it, but no one's telling them what comes next and where are they going to move. And, you know, let's try to learn a lesson from the current BRAC, which, you know, I think we could all agree was done in a slightly unplanned way. And now we're all paying the price for that. And the entire city is going to pay the price for that as far as traffic and other issues.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I think you've got to deal with here is that it's not just shutting down a building. It's where do those people go? How much of your workforce will you lose? What kind of brain drain will you see? It's more than just a physical building issue. Really, it's a people issue.
One of the things that we'll get into in our series next week is the fact you talk about the brain drain. There hasn't been nearly as much as people were expecting. In some cases, twice as many people staying as expected. And we'll talk on the series next week about what kind of a monkey wrench that throws into the plans. The number two story of the week, according to John Desenberg on the Federal News Countdown, is from Federal News Radio. The headline, Civilian BRAC Gains Hill Support, and you can read it and all of our countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Jason Miller's story number two is up next. It's the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
For over 40 years, Mantech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for Mantech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, Mantech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row, was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. Mantech is an equal opportunity employer.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
The U.S. military is increasingly deploying airborne video surveillance applications to aid in a variety of operations, such as natural disaster assessment, homeland defense and protection, as well as military intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions. Only satellite networks can provide unconstrained coverage over land and water, enabling critical information to be shared in real time with command and control locations. Whether your mission is to secure our country's borders, operate UAV networks, or provide situational awareness beyond the line of sight, Hughes has the scalable airborne solution to meet your requirements anywhere in the world. Hughes commercial airborne broadband solutions are ideal for both fixed wing and rotary aircraft, are interoperable, can work seamlessly within your current operational network, and fit into your tightly constrained budget.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes at defense.hughes.com.
HalfPriceDC.com is your gateway to the best daily deals in the area. Don't miss out on great deals to Blue Ridge Shadows Golf Club. It's Virginia's most beautiful golf, ranked one of America's top women-friendly courses by Golf Digest Woman Magazine. And All Sports Grand Prix, the premier indoor karting facility in Northern Virginia. Get the feel of real racing. If you want in on these deals, go to HalfPriceDC.com. Click Sign Me Up. That's halfpricedc.com.
Those golf balls you slice into the water could stay there for hundreds of years, but a new ball made from an unlikely source could make your game greener. Most lobster shells get tossed in landfills, but David Nevant, an engineering professor at the University of Maine, found a way of getting them back in the water. put them in golf balls.
The approach we took was to take the lobster shell and to grind it up into a powder and then bind that powder together with a biodegradable polymer and use that in the core.
That's coated with another eco-friendly material. Nevant says it's indistinguishable from a traditional ball and could be used, for example, on cruise ship driving ranges.
In a period of a week or 2 weeks or so, the entire ball breaks down and releases the lobster shell back into the ocean.
With some tweaking of the lobster core formula, Nevant thinks the ball's performance can be golf course ready, and then maybe you won't be quite as steamed when your ball strays into the water. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Plan now to attend a firm's May 19th luncheon to learn how GSA's Federal Acquisition Service delivers innovation government-wide. You'll hear from Assistant Commissioner Mary Davey and her leadership team as they discuss how the agency's integrated technology services works to solve government's most pressing IT challenges. From cloud computing to telepresence, they'll delve deeply into what's ahead from GSA. Join them on Thursday, May 19th from 11:30 a.m. at the G.W. Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute in studio this week. And Jason, your story number two is from Federal News Radio. The headline is House Committee Strips Funding for Army Email Cloud. And the first thing I thought when I saw this story is one misconception I think a lot of people have about some of the efforts like cloud and data center consolidation and so on that will save money long term is that we don't seem to really focus on the upfront costs, on what it costs to get the job done in the first place. And this is pretty substantial. This is a 98% cut. Explain what's going on here exactly.
Well, I think this story just shows a way of the broader cloud computing email as a service. But what's happening for the Army is they're moving hundreds of thousands of people into this DISA cloud email. And this, they're very excited about. There was a press conference earlier this week about how much progress they're making, and you know, 20,000 people a month are moving. Then all of a sudden the subcommittee comes in and says, we're not so excited about this. We're going to hold back funding until you give us a report on how you're doing. And I think it's, once again, Congress not understanding technology. You have a staff member on the Hill who hears about Google or Yahoo or somebody else and it's insecure, so therefore we can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they don't look into the facts that, well, number one, this is a DISA data center. This is not a public cloud.
Fred's data center.
Exactly. Nothing against Fred, of course.
Fred's great.
But number one, it's as secure as it ever was. And number two, it's not understanding about what really cloud computing is. You can tell them, well, it's like, you know, you use Google email, right? Oh, you have a Gmail account. That's cloud. Really? I don't want government using that. The Army, they could give up battle plans, and then they take it to the nth degree.
Yeah.
So I think there's some misunderstanding here, and I'd be interested to see if Buck McKeon was going to put this back in too, in the markup, when that comes around. But again, I think this is just a if you will, maybe a bit of a precursor to the challenge that we're going to see across government as more and more agencies are moving to cloud. You know, a couple weeks ago, the White House held an update on their IT reforms, and Vivek Kundra, the federal CIO, said 15 agencies are ready to move to the cloud for email. GSA is going to release a blanket purchase agreement, that RFP, next week on email as a service. It's going to be worth $2.5 billion across the government. And if the Army, who takes the most security, you know, is one of those agencies that takes really security really seriously, understands the cost-benefit analysis because of the mission support for warfighters is having a little bit of roadblocks. What's going to happen when, you know, the Commerce Department, when Interior, well, Interior's got their own problems with that, but when other agencies are going to start going to this BPA and trying to do email services, someone on the Hill going to go, whoa, slow down for a second.
Yeah.
We want a 40-page report, and then we'll decide in 60 days.
John, nobody ever went broke overestimating Congress's willingness to blow something completely out of proportion, did they? This seems to be another example of that.
You know, and I don't know how many people saw the story in the Wall Street Journal this week or read somewhere else about Amazon's trouble with their cloud.
Uh-huh.
And you know, this is not Fred's computer. This is Amazon. They basically invented this line of business, which is using their servers to host people and to do this cloud computing. And they went down in a big way this month or last month and took down a lot of businesses with them. And these businesses thought that they were very secure as well, and these businesses thought they had backup plans as well, and you know what? They didn't. So not to disagree with Jason, but hey, you know, this stuff isn't perfect yet, and you know, we're still seeing some big technical issues.
But remember, exactly, it is what it is. Servers go down all the time. This was not a security hack. Amazon didn't open up their data center and let people walk in. They had a technical problem. We're not, computing is still an art. It's not a science. And whether you have it at Amazon or you have it in your backyard or you have it underneath the Pentagon 17 floors below in the center of the earth, you're going to have fail. I mean, things are going to fail because of what it is. And I think that, you know, feel free to disagree with me. That's fine, by the way.
Well, you know,
I actually like it.
I'll tell you, the cloud, the problem with it, and I don't know if it's an issue here, but the cascading effect of these failures, when one failure leads to them overloading the circuit on another server, which leads to a failure on that server, and I think these are some of the more serious issues specifically with cloud computing.
All right. That story is Jason Miller's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week. The headline is House Committee Strips Funding for Army Email Cloud, and you can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have the number one story of the week as selected by Jason Miller and also as selected by John Desenberg of the Performance Institute when we come back on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
ABC News Radio, I'm Luke Russer. The latest jobs report shows private companies added more than 240,000 people to payrolls last month. President Obama says that's in spite of the fact we face some, quote, strong headwinds like gas prices.
The fact is that we are still making progress, and that proves how resilient the American economy is and how resilient the American worker is, and that we can take a hit and we can keep on going forward. That's exactly what we're doing.
The job gains were widespread. Retailers, factories, education, and healthcare all added jobs, the most in 5 years. But the unemployment rate went from 8.8 to 9%. What's that about? Economists say it means more people are re-entering the job market to look for work, and that's a good thing. President Obama is in Kentucky at this hour, set to meet with members of the Navy SEAL team credited with killing Osama bin Laden. He'll also speak with troops from the 101st Airborne during his visit to Fort Campbell. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
We've all made the mistake of getting Mum the wrong gift for Mother's Day, like when I was 9.
Hey, Mum! I got you a Tasmanian devil for Mother's Day!
Don't make that mistake. Get something she can bite into and won't bite it back, like a $50 gift card to Outback. Plus, buy it between now and Mother's Day and you'll get your own $10 bonus card free. It's always fresh in the Outback. Open early at 11 a.m. on Mother's Day, May 8th.
Flowers, of course. Gift card for a day at the spa. A new robe. One Hallmark card. A good pen to write a nice note. John Halligan has a great mom, so he ran to Walgreens to get some great gifts for Mother's Day. With no lines, it took him 6 minutes to grab what he needed. That gives John more time to spend with mom. Right now, buy one, get one free on select fragrances. And don't forget her favorite chocolates. Simplify your shopping. With Walgreens, there's a way.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Steve Shannon, principal at Odin Feldman & Pittleman and a member of the firm's litigation practice group. We've got some interesting topics for you, so tune in. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com and visit my blog at blueprintforwealth.org.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat.
in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Simone Zickman, the CIO for Commerce.
Align the data center consolidation plans with things like ending of leases so that you don't need to have lease termination costs. To align the consolidation plans with technology refresh cycles so you don't end up in a situation where you're having to purchase new equipment to stand up a new data center when your existing facilities may have relatively new equipment already in place.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every Friday at 3 o'clock, we do the Federal News Countdown, where two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the three news stories they think are most important to people who work for the federal government. Those news stories from the previous week, of course. They rank them in order from 3 to 1, and we count them down in that order on the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 3. My experts today are John Desenberg of the Performance Institute and Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller. And we're up to...
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by John Desenberg, is Mike Causey's column headlined, Hoping for a Buyout, Hang Tight. This column that Mike wrote this week, talking about the Postal Service's buyouts and the Federal Trade Commission's buyouts. Do you think we'll see a lot more of this? And is this really a good idea at this point in time,
John? Well, you know, for anyone who worked for the federal government in the 90s, like I did, seeing this article really raised my eyebrows, because I thought it was kind of disproven in the 90s as a good idea. Certainly it gets people out the door, but it tended to get the people out the door who maybe we didn't want to see leave, right? Well, you know, it tends to incentivize people who can, who have a lot of skills and who have a lot of options in their career and who maybe are some of our most talented people. It sometimes incentivizes them to just walk away. I don't believe it's been targeted or used selectively enough in the past to shape the workforce in the way we want to shape the workforce. Now, I know Mike Causey in his article said that they're going to do it differently this time. It's going to be much more specific and much more tailored, and we're not going to let our best and our brightest walk away with this money in their pocket. But I am generally skeptical and a little bit worried. You know, I understand it's considered to be a nicer way of doing things than a reduction in force. But I also believe that you can't target it as much as you would like to.
The other issue with this, Jason, is, and John mentions the RIFs, I think the kind of the de facto method of behavior of somebody that works at one of these agencies is, oh, they're doing buyouts, so RIFs must be the next thing. And so even people who wouldn't consider the buyout, who may not even be eligible for it, are thinking, well, my job still could be on the line at some point in time.
Well, it does. It definitely becomes a morale issue, and they're reducing people. I'm already overworked. I'm already underpaid. Now they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue I think that brings up is, as you said, John, how do they not lose the people? I mean, it's either you have buyouts or you don't. If you take a buyout and you're a star, unless if they're going to give you retention bonuses, which I don't know if they do very often in government. How do you stop someone from taking it? I mean, it's not like, well, John's my star player. John, I'm not offering you a buyout. I'm going to offer the other people behind you. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That becomes a different issue, more complicated issue, because, well, why not me? But why them and not me?
Yep.
Maybe I want to take the 25 grand and go out the door.
And then conversely, what I saw experiencing this firsthand in the 90s, people who were about to retire anyway and you wanted to retire sat around and waited for their $25,000. And so you're paying, actually overpaying certain people who might have left anyway. So there are a lot of issues with this buyout.
What about the institutional knowledge that's lost here, too? I mean, that's one thing that agencies, whenever I talk to an HR person, they always say, we really want to hang on to our people who have been here for a while, at least long enough to be able to get them to share what they know with the who's going to be coming up behind them. And if you just kind of push the button on a buyout, all of a sudden you have a bunch of people gone. You don't have any opportunity to do that at all.
Well, there's a great tool called, I think it's called double encumbering. And what it really means is you have a shadow on the job following you for 6 months. And you, some agencies do get permission to do that, which is have someone follow the current person who has the job around, learn their network of contacts, etc. It's a very successful practice, but unfortunately it rarely happens. Usually what happens is the person, one person leaves and then the next person walks into kind of a vacuum.
Interestingly, the OPM Director John Barry is looking at and working with Congress and the White House on a legislative proposal that would no longer penalize people when they retire from either A, staying around for a little bit longer to do that mentoring. And in fact, he said that it's kind of a slow ride to retirement, a phased in retirement. And if they are allowed to do that, it doesn't affect their annuities. And it also says you have to use X percentage of your time. I think it's 30-40%. Doing either succession planning or mentoring of the next person behind you. So they realize it's a problem. They're going to try to address it. Of course, now we're talking about Congress again, and they're already trying to cut pay, cut benefits, do furloughs. So I don't think they're going to be so open to a bill that keeps people around at a high rate much for a longer period of time.
You know, real quickly on this, what I saw recently at Homeland Security, for example, is, and it's amazing with such large organizations that so much depends on one person. But sometimes it does. Someone retired. He was an acquisition expert. And they just couldn't do it without him. And they had to literally bring him back to do the work even after he retired, because sometimes so much depends on just one person.
And the question, I guess, is, does he get penalized because he's an annuitant now, and does he lose some money? Or some of the things under acquisition, you can bring people back under retirees, you can bring them back, and it won't affect them because there is that, I think, regulation or law that allows that to happen.
Right. Right, without taking a hit on your pension.
One thing that I think is always interesting about Mike's columns is Mike is so connected that he even has the rumors, the one that he mentions at the end of this column, and this column's posted up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, rumors that the buyout pot will be sweetened. You know, everybody's always looking for a little edge. 25 grand isn't enough. Boy, it would be great if it was this. But none of that seems to be
Well, Francis, can you see the Tea Party, going along with offering people $50,000 to retire?
How would
that play in their districts? I don't think very well.
Well, I think that's the point of Congress not being in the mood to help out federal agencies or federal employees from that perspective either.
This number one story of the week, as chosen by John Desenberg on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, is from Mike Causey. The headline is "Hoping for a Buyout, Hang Tight," and it's posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, as all of our stories are on the countdown. You can hear Jason Miller's story number one. It's the story that we have left, and we'll get to it next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
NASA and the U.S. Agency for International Development have signed a 5-year agreement that will put the space agency's data about the Earth to work for USAID. The agency plans to use NASA imagery and other geospatial technologies to help developing countries solve challenges around issues like climate change, agriculture, and disaster response. The agreement builds on a joint program the two agencies have already been using to forecast environmental changes in Central America, East Africa, and the Himalayas.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond. Brought to you by Airink.
Fort Campbell in Kentucky is expected to be the scene of a visit today by President Obama. He's scheduled to meet with some of those involved in the military assault that killed Osama bin Laden. Fort Campbell is home to the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, which participated in the raid. A team of Navy SEALs raided the compound in Pakistan. He was later buried at sea. Authorities are now combing through the effects he left behind. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case.
which is why they rely on ARINC to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Authors, exploring national security, power, and intelligence in the 21st century. What is smart power? How do 21st century challenges demand a reshaping and redefining of global leadership? And how best can national security leaders transform the intelligence enterprise to meet today's needs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Professor Joseph Nye, author of The Future of Power, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from Agency Leaders at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com.
This is the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My panelists, my experts choosing the most important federal news stories of the week this week are Jason Miller, executive editor of Federal News Radio, and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. And Jason Miller, I have to tease you a little bit about story number one. You knew I was going to do this because story number one, as chosen by you on the Federal News Countdown this week, is by Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller. And it's just funny how it works out that way. I will give you credit. This is a big story because the headline is Fog Lifting Over Federal Employees, Officials Say. Public Service Recognition Week didn't get a whole lot of play outside our community this week. Is that fair or not fair, do you think?
No, I think it's fair. I think they usually have a big thing on the mall last year and previous years, and they canceled it for whatever reason, whether it's a money issue or not. But, yeah, I got to choose my own story at least a little bit. I can't resist. In fact, though, I did debate several different stories that were out there, and the reason why I came back to this one as my top story is not just because of the fog lifting. I mean, we had John Barry on the Mike Causey show earlier this week, and he talked about very similar things. And I think going back to what we talked about earlier for John's story about Osama bin Laden and then the tornadoes, and there's so many, for the first time in quite a while, I think federal employees are getting a lot of positive feedback for the work they do. And as we talk about often, that doesn't happen very often. It doesn't happen probably nearly enough, as they would say. And I think that we had the federal employees had a pretty good week of good news. And this conference that I went to where they talked about the changes and how they're trying to improve morale, I think is important because it's a good reminder that says this is not only are things going well, because there's a lot of negativity around the shutdown, around the bills in Congress, but not only things are going well, but here are other things that we're doing because we as secretaries of those departments, it was HUD, it was GSA, it was transportation, it was HHS, it was OPM, they all recognize there are things that we do need to do better to say to our federal employees, thank you very much. We do appreciate the work you do. And I think all of it coming together, it makes it a pretty important story.
I think they deserve some credit, too, for things like the SAVE Awards, where there are some of the cynics will look at stuff like that and go, well, the ideas aren't that great, and it's blah, 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 blah. At least they're trying. There's some effort being put into going to employees and saying, we recognize that you know what you're doing, that you're not a drone, that you do a unique, valuable task every day, and so therefore you might be able to help us figure out how your mission can be met better.
You know, the sad thing is it's such an uphill battle with the onslaught of negative media. I'm reminded of a Gallup survey recently of people under the age of 25. What public employee would you name from media and TV and movies? And the number one answer was Mayor Quimby from The Simpsons.
I thought it would have been Newman.
So, you know, there's, you know, we we just, it's an uphill battle. When you have the Mayor Quimby's on TV every day, 5 days a week, it's going to be very hard to battle back from that, and with some of our politicians as well.
How do we do that? I mean, I've asked any number of different people. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. Who is the person or group that should be the point on going out to people and saying, not rah-rah propaganda stuff, not we're the greatest because we're whatever, but who should be going out and saying, just so you know, just for your information, Mr. and Mrs. Citizen, this is, here are some examples of what federal or any public officials do for you.
Well, you already see that. I think the Sammys, that award is a very good one.
But that, I'm talking about going to people like my mom and dad and your parents, Jason, who are just normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill citizens. They pay their taxes, and they don't necessarily run in our circles and hear about the Sammys. Right. They don't get that stuff. That stuff doesn't show up on our sister station upstairs or in the newspaper or on TV.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of my own in-laws. They love the show JAG, right? I mean, there are shows that had a positive federal employee, you know, but law enforcement or attorney.
Yes, but that connection's not always made.
That's true.
I don't think.
Well, I think part of the issue here is when the government was close to the shutdown a few weeks ago, the White House got very aggressive in explaining, hey, the national parks, federal employees, Social Security check, federal employees. Mm-hmm. So they did a job because it was politically smart to be that vocal. And I think that's what the failing is happening. And I've asked that question to Secretary Donovan from HUD, saying, are you guys doing enough to get the word out? And, you know, he was politically correct and said, well, you can never do too much. And
right.
Never, you know.
We're always trying. Progress is being made.
But I think the point is that it's got to start with the president. The president has got to do more than just, you know, he's got to remind the public about what federal service is and who does it. And a lot of people gave President Obama credit when he came out and said he wants to make government service cool again. Well, what has he done to live up to that statement? Well, I mean, you could argue not enough. I mean, he's caught saying federal IT is horrible.
Yep.
Well, you know what? I think there's some people who disagree with you, Mr. President. He got, you know, you don't hear about until the shutdown is almost right at the doorstep.
Pay freeze
happened. Now, yeah, it's a drop in the bucket and it's symbolic, but that doesn't help.
Well, I'll tell you one accompanying story this week, and I think we all saw it, which is the huge spike in the number of young people living in the Washington, D.C. area. I'm sure we all saw that story in the Washington Post. Mm. I mean, just a stunning increase in the number of 20 to 34-year-olds who are living in the city. And, you know, for a long time, there was this feeling, well, we can't recruit young people to the government. They don't think it's cool. I think that's gone away. Young people are flocking here. If you walk through agencies today, it's much younger, generally, than it was 10 years ago. So I think there are some positive signs, at least among the new generation. I'm not sure that it's that much of a stigma.
But is it the fact because of what the White House is doing, or is it, and not just the White House, but agencies more generally, or because the government's been hiring and the private sector hasn't been as aggressive? So, you know, if you think about in the late 90s and early 2000s, there was this competition for IT, and the government said, well, we're losing all the great IT minds to the dot-coms and the you know, Googles and Microsofts and those types. So, well, now those companies aren't hiring as much, and there's fewer companies because of consolidation. So, you know, is a matter of that? I mean, I'm asking the question versus...
Well, and I'd also like to see where federal employees are on the list. I know, you know, people don't like bankers. People don't like used car salesmen. People don't like attorneys. I mean, there are many people that are on a negative, kind of have a negative perception. So I don't think federal employees really, probably in the scheme of things, are that bad.
The marketing effort that I talked about a few minutes ago, AFGE has done some commercials, and they've done some outreach there. There's a certain percentage of the population that's predisposed not to trust information that a union puts out there. So I'm not sure if they're the right. It certainly can't hurt. What they're doing can't hurt. But they might not be the right person. But I just continue to wonder who might be at the head of that campaign. The president, I guess, is one choice for that. But again, not somebody that every person in the United States would necessarily look at and say, I'll take his word for it.
But I think it's a combination. I think it starts at the top, and it kind of trickles down to the secretaries and the cabinet secretaries. One of the most interesting things that came out from the OPM, had a couple events this week, and one of the things that they do is a new recruitment tool. And this is a little off track, but recruitment's part of this idea of the image of the federal government. And they said, one of the comments they made was, every federal employee, 2 million federal employees, are a recruiter in themselves. So it starts at the top, but the top's got to make you feel good. And then you want to go out as a federal employee and start talking about it. Hey, you know, John, why don't you come work for the government? You should see the stuff I'm doing. It's really cool. Yeah, there's some bureaucracy and there's some challenges, but it's no different than every other organization. But you got to hear what I'm doing. And if you feel downtrodden, if you feel like, well, I my pay is cut. They're talking about laying me off or furloughing me. There's these attacks. They want to cut my benefits. They want to raise my high three to my high five. They want to, you know, I can't hire anyone. Eventually you're going to say, you don't want to come work with me. I'm only there because I got golden handcuffs, but this place is awful.
Hmm.
Well, it's not just one person. It's not just the president, but I think it definitely starts there and it has to flow down.
They trickle down. You know, it's interesting you say that, because what the studies have shown is the best employees, the most successful employees, are the ones who were recruited by someone they knew.
Hmm.
They are the ones that are most likely to work out, because what the current employees are doing, basically, as Jason says, is they're pre-screening people. So this is very, very important.
Where do you see all of this going? We've got the bill tracker at federalnewsradio.com that lists all the potential legislation that will affect pay and benefits, and you can see all of that there. Of the things that are on the docket, what do you think are the most likely to affect people? Any thoughts about that?
I mean, I'm just going to throw out, I think the pay freeze will be extended. I don't know if we're supposed to make predictions here, but
it's fine with me.
You know, the pay freeze going from 2 years to 3 years, that to me, that seems kind of like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I don't make predictions, but this is my thoughts around this.
How about an educated guess?
There you go. My thoughts around this are this. You've got to keep in mind two things. The House members like to, because they're controlled by Republicans, they like to puff up their chests and be and talk loudly, but their shtick is fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because they can pass 100 bills, but the Senate Democrats won't pick any of them up.
They'll drown.
And the White House won't approve any of them, so none of them become the law. And there's not enough of a Senate majority to get a two-thirds vote. Now, what they may get is as you said, some nicks at the side, shave the sides down a little bit. But I think that for the most part, the federal employees are not going to be furloughed. They're not going to have a hiring freeze, and they're not going to face huge, huge cuts to pensions or benefits. A pay freeze, it's more another symbolic thing. I could see that happening.
Mm-hmm. A great countdown, as always, gentlemen. Jason Miller, your story number one is fog lifting over federal employees, officials say. It's at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And all of the stories we counted down today with Jason Miller and with John Desenberg of the Performance Institute are listed there. And next week, next Friday, no federal news countdown because I'm not here. Next weekend is NASCAR weekend, so I'll be in Delaware checking out the NASCAR race. Back in 2 weeks with a brand new federal news countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and In Depth with Francis Rose, continuing in moments.